We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College, presented by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina. We resolve to help North Carolina stay healthy.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. So glad to be back. And we're presented by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina. They are Adam, get a notepad out. They're reminding you to practice your three W's: wear, wait, and wash. Tar Heels weared Wake Forest. They waited NC State. Pitt tonight. Get ready for a washing. And then it's time to reboot for another three-game wear, wait, wash.
That basically turned the season around, that approach.
Yeah.
Why have you not brought that up to Coach Williams in the radio show?
Coach, have you thought about wear, waiting, and washing?
I know you're working on these substitutions or whatever, but we've solved all your issues on the podcast. You approach everything as wear, wait, and wash.
Yeah. We resolved to keep North Carolina healthy and to have the North Carolina Tar Heels win games three in groups of three.
Right.
Of course, that includes the win over NC State on Saturday. We're going to talk about that victory over the Pack. Tar Heels already back in action tonight in Pittsburgh. The Panthers had a long COVID break, came off that break, were playing well, but lost this past weekend to Wake by one. So we'll talk some about veteran team in Pitt that the Tar Heels are going to see coming up tonight. And Adam, you went out. This is what separates Adam from others. Adam heard Andrew Platek mention that he had a favorite professor here at Carolina. So, like, most people might just think, oh, that's a nice story. No. Adam attacked the story and got him right here on this podcast, Adam.
Matt Andrews joining us today. I don't know what makes you think that I don't just normally consult with a variety of professors just in my normal life.
Day to day.
Right.
Just checking in.
Yeah, I like to keep tabs on academia.
Guys, I'd really like to discuss the fall of the Roman Empire for a little while.
Yeah.
Anybody got some time?
What's up with that Renaissance? How's that doing? Do we still feel the same about that?
So, a little different from the normal conversations that we have, although we talked some Tar Heel stuff with Matt. I think it's a really interesting interview. You can see why Professor Andrews is successful.
Well, and you heard Andrew Playtech say that Professor Andrews has a way of talking to you that makes you feel like you're not being lectured. And I thought that was the case, but I thought it was also interesting. The academic side is something we talk about a lot of times kind of from a distance. It was nice to really be able to hear from that side in a non-adversarial way.
What do you normally like line up against professors and play like Red Rover?
Well, sometimes there's a disconnect between athletics and academics, Jones, and we're just here to bridge the gap.
Yeah, that gap is bridged coming up in just a little bit. We've got a few more inspirational words.
Just a few more?
Just a few. We're just going to select a couple. People have been full of inspiration, which I totally understand. I mean, when you get Randy Jackson involved, Adam, it's hard not to feel like you're flying in the clouds. Adam has a list. What else is going on? Big weekend for the Tar Heels in total around Carolina Athletics. We'll talk a little bit about that, too. Adam, what else is going on?
I think that's plenty for one pod. Don't be so greedy.
Tar Heels beat NC State on Saturday. Before we break it down, a reminder that we're brought to you by UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. And Adam, Tar Heels go, for the first time all season, they shoot better than 50% in both halves. They have now shot 50% or better in three consecutive halves because they did so as well in the second half against Wake Forest on Wednesday night. And I think a lot of it is the quality of shot that Carolina is getting. And that doesn't mean that the Tar Heels are taking fewer three-pointers necessarily. They took 11 and made 4 in this game. So, I mean, low-ish numbers, but not super low for the Tar Heels. Coach Williams talked about this a little bit on the radio show last night when we were talking about this subject, that he felt the team was getting better shots. And one way to recognize if it's not a good shot, which is one I had not thought about before, was he said, when you surprise your teammates. He said, because when you surprise your teammates with the shot that you take, then there isn't the board coverage that you want necessarily. Maybe the defensive rotation gets thrown off. He said, so we're surprising our teammates less with the shots that we're taking. I thought that was a good point. Carolina's getting good quality shots. It feels like close to the basket more times than not, which is what the Tar Heels want to do, either by the drive or by feeding the post. And if they don't do that, then they're kicking back out to guys who can shoot. It's pretty basic, but it feels like what they've done well here as of late.
I noticed in those first few games, a couple times Armando Bacot would just shout, "Merciful heavens!" when someone
heavens
jacked
the Murgatroyd.
And here lately, he's just raised a knowing eyebrow and nodded. So I think that is a good sign. But that Roy Williams makes some good points about basketball. I think that is one of them. I think the eye test matches up with the efficiency numbers, where when you watch Carolina, you just feel like it's a little more seamless. And the points per possession type numbers are going up. Carolina had their best first half of the year against the Pack. And I think players are taking shots that are a better fit for them, which is all part of it as well.
Dayron Sharpe, inspired by being on the pod on Friday, Adam, combines with Armando Bacot to go 16 of 25 from the field. Those two players ended up with 33 points and 18 rebounds, and they were a big part of this win. Carolina's presence down low, which for this particular game was those two being the dominant factors.
We talked about this on the video pod, which, by the way, or the Rapid Reactions video pod, I thought that was the best one so far.
Yeah, I failed to send the audio out, and that was my fault. I just forgot to do it. It's hard. We got a lot going on right now.
If we sent out everything we did, you'd just be hit by a torrential downpour of content.
Just wait until we send out Adam's lessons on how to do card tricks, magic tricks.
Well, and I thought it was nice that everyone was able to see take one and take two of the Anthony Harris interview. That was good.
And everyone liked my socks, which, by the way, I have to say, I did not color coordinate my outfit on purpose, but it looked pretty sharp.
But now you're not. Whenever the Tar Heels play at home again, which is like 2 months from now,
yeah,
that'll be going through your
head. Pretty sharp is how I would classify that youngster on the screen.
And so we talked about this on that show about a couple of those Sharp and Baycott rebounds. Those were tough rebounds in traffic, working through and around people to get the ball. I mean, those weren't like, oh, the ball just fell to me. Those were tough ACC-type rebounds.
And I didn't think State played poorly. I thought State played pretty well. I mean, Devin Daniels has really turned into one of the better offensive players, I feel like, in the league. He's hard to stop, although I thought he finished with 21, but I thought Leaky Black did a good job on Devin Daniels, and that's, you may go, wait, he had 21, but I think a lot of those were either when the Tar Heels switched the screen and somebody else was guarding him, or if someone else was just in the game at that period in time. But it felt like Leaky did a good job against Devin Daniels. My point is, I thought Carolina had to go win this game. They had to go win the game by playing well, and I thought they did that. Boy, I thought Anthony Harris gave Carolina a big spark in this game. Just doing the stuff Anthony Harris does, which is being in the right place and going fast and making impressive plays. He just, the steal, then when he dribbled behind his back and ran a 3-on-2 fast break, like to perfection for an easy layup. Of course, him catching a kind of wild shot by Caleb Love, and it was just the shot clock had gotten low and the Tar Heels hadn't had a great possession. Caleb had to force a shot up late in the shot clock. Anthony Harris catches it, scores. That was a big play that it felt like helped finish the game for Carolina. He just, again, we've said it before, just good things seem to happen when he's out there.
And that break you mentioned, that was an instinctive play that didn't look like a player who has played 3 games in the past year and what about 10 games in the past 2 years. He looks like someone who's been out there every single day, and we've talked so much this season about, well, you got to be patient with these young players, parentheses, except for Anthony Harris, who I treat him like he's an old guy, but he's a young player, especially in terms of experience. He's the youngest one out there. So, but he doesn't play like it, and I think that's such a nice asset for this year's team to have.
By the way, Adam mentioned the video pod. Or the Rapid Reactions post-game pod. There's so many pods, Adam. The stuff C.B. McGrath did, I hope you got a chance to watch it, talking about ball screen defense. I think that's something, that's one of those things that if you watch enough basketball, you're going to have an opinion on it, even if your opinion isn't educated, even if you think it is. Does that make sense? Like, you may think, well, wait a second, I watch every game the Tar Heels play, and I don't think they defend the ball screen right because guys give them trouble sometimes. And I thought CB broke it down really well, kind of what goes in to defending the ball screen, how Carolina as a team kind of goes into a game, you know, what the approach is. And he made a really good point in there because I went back and watched it again, Adam, just that part. I mean, then I stared at my socks for a while, but he made the point, which is a really good one, that's like, look, State's going to run this almost, and State's not the only team. A lot of teams do it. They run this almost every possession. So inevitably, there's going to be some times where things don't go right, that it's just because it is not an easy thing to defend. That's why a lot of teams like to run it. And when you're doing it every single possession, it's not always easy to stop. So if you have not watched that, and you've ever gone, why is that ball screen giving Carolina so much trouble? I would really encourage you to go find the archive. It's both archived on Facebook and on Twitter. Might be on GoHeels.com too, where it is worth checking out because I think you will learn a little something about defending the screen, which is a big part of the game.
CB's segment is towards the end, so you can fast forward through the part that's Jones and Adam. You watch Anthony Harris and watch Coach Williams. And then go to CB segment at the end because he did do a great job with all the stuff he talked about.
Not that this is shocking news, Adam, but when the Tar Heels don't turn the ball over, they're getting a lot better on offense. Like, and to the point that we started with about higher efficiency, better shots,
But none of that matters if they turn it over. And they did a really good job in the first half. The second half, at times they did a really good job, but there were a couple shaky moments too where the turnovers seemed to kind of build off themselves. I think Carolina is getting better protecting the basketball, but that's still something that has to continue to improve.
Well, and the Tar Heels are going to face some better defenses in these weeks to come. You've got Pittsburgh, which is a tough bunch of rascals. You got Clemson, which has been, for most of the year, one of the best defensive teams in the country, although they've had some struggles recently. You're going to play Virginia, which everyone knows how proficient they are defensively. So the struggles you had against some of the weaker defenses that Carolina's faced cannot continue against these opponents that are coming up. And it looks like the Tar Heels are figuring out how to do that. And I think, encouragingly, the turnovers are going down while the pace at which they're playing is going up. And I think even a couple weeks ago, if Carolina had tried to play at the pace they did against NC State, some of the cardboard cutouts would have been headless because there would have been basketballs bouncing off of them. And they've gotten a handle on that.
86-76 was the final. Adam, anything else about the game against NC State?
No.
44-30 on the glass, 48-40 in the paint, 17-12 second chance points, five guys in double figures. All things that traditionally Coach Williams likes.
Do you think we've reached the point where we can definitively say this team is just a balanced team? There's not one player who you can confidently say he's getting 20 tonight.
Right.
But I think there's five or six who you can confidently say he's probably getting 10.
Absolutely. I think it is one of the most balanced teams in that regard that I've seen Carolina have in a while. And that's not to say, like, for example, when they had Tyler Hansbrough and Danny Green and Wayne Ellington and Ty Lawson, they were balanced. But those guys, any one of those guys could put up 25 at any moment. I don't feel like Carolina has one or two dominant scorers or even guys who are going to threaten. I mean, Garrison Brooks has done it in the past where he's had some huge scoring numbers. That was last year mostly when he needed to fill that role for Carolina. I think the Tar Heels maybe don't need somebody to do that as much because they do have a lot of guys who can score. I think that's probably the biggest part of it, is that they just don't need it.
I think it's encouraging that the younger players have figured out a way to get their points. I think RJ Davis looks like a much better offensive player right now than he did a month ago, where he just thought, I just need to shoot and maybe it'll go in. Now he had a couple really nice moves against State, and I thought Kerwin Walton really was quiet, but then all of a sudden here he comes hitting two big 3-point shots when you need them. That's the kind of contributions you need, and I think it shows a little bit of toughness too. To your Kerwin Walton, everybody's been telling you how great you are, and you don't look great for the first 35 minutes of the game, and then here you're just knocking a couple threes.
Armando Bacot's kind of continued, I don't want to say he's flown under the radar, but I think if you voted right now, I would say Armando Bacot's been Carolina's best player from start to finish to this point of the season, or most consistent player.
I think that's how we would vote, because we've seen Armando just sort of chug along with his 15 to 20 points and
right.
6 to 10 rebounds. But I think if you held all ACC voting right now, I don't think he'd make any of the teams.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, Carolina, statistically, they don't have a player in the top. I think it's 25 in the league in scoring. They have a bunch in the rebounding because Leakey's there and Dayron's there and Armando and Garrison. But they don't have a big scorer or field goal percentage or three-point shooter or something that might catch your eye or assist guy. It is just a very balanced team. So it may be one of those years where the Tar Heels don't have somebody represented either on all ACC, or they maybe have one player or something like that, depending on where they finish when the season's said and done, because they just don't have, again, they just don't have one person who has done that, nor have they needed to do that.
And it's been the same thing defensively. Carolina wasn't a stretch where five different players had won the Defensive Player of the Game award from the coaches for five straight games. And the same thing, the way they were passing around the leading scorer title. And I think that makes them more fun to watch. And let's name drop a little. I was texting with Marcus Page.
Wow.
Who's in Slovenia.
You're so big time.
And he said, he was like, I don't understand why everyone is so frustrated with this team. He said, I love watching them play. He said, I stay up until 4 a.m. so that I can watch them live because I think they're so fun to watch because they don't do everything right, but they do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's right. And you can sit there and be frustrated that you could say, like, this is the kind of team you'd really love to see in a couple years. And chances are you may not see that team in a couple years. But why not just watch them right now? Hey, they've gotten better. Remember when everybody was freaking out? We told you just calm down a little bit. They've gotten better. Now, I do think, and we can talk about this when we talk about Pitt, I think it's tilted a little from where people were freaking out because Carolina wasn't good enough. And now I think people have convinced themselves Carolina's a little better than they actually are. Because it can't be somewhere in the middle. It's got to be one or the other. And the margin for error is still very, very thin, even though Carolina's won games.
Look, Adam, when the Tar Heels lost to State and all my friends made fun of me, the Tar Heels were no good. Now that they beat State, I can make fun of my friends. They're really good.
Right. Yeah. But as we know, you're never as good as you think you are. You're never as bad as you think you are. And I still think Carolina's still going to lose some games this
year. Sure. They have a really difficult final 11 games of the regular season.
And there's like a 5-point swing either way into what the performance could be on any given night.
One more thing about Armando Bacot, because I was starting down that path and we went somewhere else. I think Coach Williams said it really well when he said that Armando has simplified his game. Adam, I feel like he uses his body really well after he gets the ball. Like, he seems to be able to kind of knock somebody just a little bit out of the way enough with legal contact to get a clean look at the basket. Do you know what I'm talking about? I mean, he just seems to be able to get himself good looks. He's not wasting time. He's not spinning around. He's just kind of getting the ball, making a strong move or two, and putting up a high-quality shot.
I thought you saw it a couple times against Manny Bates, who Coach Williams correctly said lives for blocking shots, and I think he got, what, 4?
7.
Or 7. 4, 7, whatever. But there were also a couple he didn't get where Armando got the ball, Manny Bates was right there, and I thought to myself, oh boy, this is going to be trouble. And somehow he kind of held him off with one hand and scored with the other hand. He's gotten a lot stronger, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think is a credit to him and also to Jonas Serration.
Isn't it nice to have a game where you go 8 of 18 from the free throw line and you just go, oh, what an afterthought. That doesn't matter at all.
Free throws are so variable.
So Carolina wins it. Tar Heels now 10-5. But, Adam, now 3 straight road games on the schedule, at least as it is currently constructed. Carolina was, of course, supposed to play a home game in the middle of these 3 games. That was originally scheduled to be Notre Dame on Saturday, this upcoming Saturday, in the Smith Center. But, of course, Carolina's already played Notre Dame because that filled the hole where Syracuse had vacated earlier in the year. Then Syracuse filled the hole where Clemson was out. And Clemson's busy this weekend, so they can't come to Chapel Hill.
I've got to wash my hair.
Guys, I've got a lot of laundry to do. So, as of now, the Tar Heels don't have a game. Now, if there's COVID problems and somehow another team is left without a game and it makes sense to put these 2 teams together, maybe that happens. I can't see the future, Adam. So we'll see, but as of now, 3 straight road games at Pitt, at Clemson, at Duke.
I don't see a lot of urgency for making up that Clemson game in Chapel Hill.
From who's from the Tar Heels' perspective?
From the ACC perspective.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, and I don't know what all goes into it when they're trying to readjust things. I don't know. But, I mean, this could get into the whole other discussion about the ACC tournament, which seems to be picking up some steam about whether or not conference tournaments are going to go on as everyone thinks they are, as you and I have talked about a couple of weeks ago. I guess you just have to wait and see if somehow something happens and then there's, oh,
Yeah, these two are a match at this time. Let's just have them play. I do wonder if at some point, like a game that wasn't on Carolina's, and I'm just going to make up a game. Let's say Boston College can come to Chapel Hill and play, and that's not a game that's scheduled. But they need to get the game in for both those two teams to get to their 20 conference games or closer to it. I would think at some point some games like that might start happening.
And I wonder if that's why there doesn't seem to be this great sense of urgency for the Clemson game, because Carolina is on track to play 19.
Right.
It's not – that's pretty close to 20. And there's other teams that aren't as close. And so I think they seem to have taken the priority, but it's definitely left the Tar Heels with some difficult scheduling quirks.
Well, yeah. And in a season when the Tar Heels just never seem to play at home, of course they're going to lose a home game if this game doesn't get rescheduled. Because the Tar Heels are undefeated at home.
Yeah.
I mean, it still matters. Maybe not matters as much, but it still matters where you play.
And I think that's why this upcoming three-game stretch is so important, because I think it'll tell us something about the growth of this team. And not just has Carolina lost games on the road, they've performed more poorly on the road in
Absolutely.
Almost every category.
Yeah.
And so if they're able to come out and maybe not necessarily go 3-0, but go 3-0 in terms of better performances, then
wear-weight wash, Adam. Well, actually, it's going to be the first game's going to be wash, and then we're going to start a new wear-weight.
You just take care of the wash, and then you let the circumstances determine when the next wear comes along.
Yeah. Before we talk about Pitt, Harris Teeter is assisting you with groceries this basketball season. Each week, one winner will receive free groceries for every assist through the Big Four Grocery Assist Sweepstakes. Adam, our winner last week hails from Gastonia, North Carolina.
Tony's.
Doug.
Who likes to go to Tony's?
Doug got $365 in Harris Teeter gift cards. Visit harristeeter.com. Look for the Grocery Assist Sweepstakes section to enter. Gastonia on Gastonia. Okay, Adam, Pittsburgh coming up. And like many teams, it's been a weird season for Pitt. So they lost the season opener against St. Francis of Pennsylvania. Then they won several games in a row. Drexel, Northern Illinois. They beat Northwestern in the ACC Big Ten Challenge by one. Beat Gardner-Webb, beat Miami, lost to Louisville, and then Adam proceeded to play one game between December 22nd and January 16th. So that's almost a month with just one game. There were COVID issues in there. They played Syracuse twice on January 6th and then January 16th. They won both those games at Syracuse by 3, then beat Syracuse at home by 20, then beat Duke, and I think, you know, had that big win over Syracuse, beat Duke, everybody was freaking out about Pitt, and then they lost to Wake, and it was Wake's first win in the ACC. So I think Pitt is like a lot of ACC teams in the fact that they've had a weird year. They've had some good moments, some not as good moments. But what I think does make Pitt very dangerous is that they're old. And as we've seen, old teams are doing better. Xavier Johnson, Terrell Brown, Justin Champagne, Audis Tony, Koulibaly down low. These are all guys who have played and had success. And, you know, Champagne's leading the ACC in points and rebounds. So they're a good team. I think they've been together for a while. They've got good numbers. They're good defensively. They rebound well. This is a good team that Carolina's going to have to play well to have a chance to beat.
They go to the free throw line a ton. They get more points from the line than any other team in the league.
Well, they drive so much.
Right.
I mean, Xavier Johnson drives all the time.
And we know that's been a point of contention for the Tar Heels at times this year, although it feels like they've gotten better. Tonight will be a formidable test as to how much better they've gotten. They'll also foul you a lot. So we just talked about how 8 of 18 from the free throw line was, you probably can't go 8 of 18 tonight. You are going to go to the line unless we employ the officiating from the first half in the NC State game, in which case no one will go to the free throw line.
No.
You're going to go to the line some. You got to take advantage of those. But it's a good test. They are not the best team in the ACC, but they're not the worst either.
Right.
And I think this tells you some about how far you've come, especially on the road.
Coach Williams said he thought Xavier Johnson was one of the fastest players in the country. And he talked about the relentlessness of how he goes at you. And he really, I mean, he's a junior. He's been starting since he was a freshman. And he does. They similar to Florida State, at least Xavier Johnson individually, just doesn't give you a chance to catch your breath. He's going to keep attacking you when he has the ball, whether that's to score himself or to get something going for Pitt as a team.
And we've seen Caleb Love be taken advantage of by some older guards this year when he was but an infant in his college basketball career. It feels like he's matured some, and tonight is a chance to show that, because every freshman at some point gets to the point where you feel like, okay, they belong. If Caleb Love's reached the point where he belongs, you're going to see it tonight.
Champagne is 6'6". He is averaging 20 points and better than 12 rebounds. He can shoot the three. He's shooting 53% from the field, 35% from three-point range. He has really had a big step forward here in his second year, and he's a tough person to guard. I'll be interested to see if Carolina has Leaky Black on him, if that's Garrison Brooks who gets the assignment on Champagne, because he will go inside more than a traditional player that Leaky Black defends. Not that Leaky can't defend in the post. I'm not suggesting that, but be interesting to see how Carolina defends him, because he is somebody you have to keep your eye on.
He's come a long way. Remember when he had such a good game against Carolina and it was kind of like, who is this guy?
Right.
And now he's the guy.
So it's 7:00, Carolina Pitt, only meeting of the year scheduled between the two. We'll be on there at 6 p.m. Pittsburgh Tar Heels, Tuesday night hoops.
And then in theory, a week off. So you really don't want to sit on a poor performance for a week.
All right, Adam, should we get to our interview?
Okay.
Before we do it, LS Tractor can help make short work of your outside chores and projects. That's normal yard maintenance, larger projects too. LS Tractor has the machine for you. Visit LS Tractor, that's the letter L, the letter S, TractorUSA.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? So again, this is Matt Andrews is our guest, professor here at Carolina. Andrew Playtech mentioned him in the interview we had with Andrew a couple weeks ago as one of his favorite professors. As you were here, Dr. Andrews does a lot of his coursework revolves around athletics and sports and how what they say about society and how they can be windows into some larger, more real world topics. Did I do that well, Adam?
I think it's cool that those are classes you can take at the University of North Carolina.
Absolutely.
Like, these are classes I would have wanted to take. And the fact that he's designed all these, not just, and it's not like some random class that everybody kind of snickers at. This is one of the most highly regarded professors on campus. And he just so happens to be talking about something that we kind of know about.
So we're going to get to our conversation with Matt Andrews. Come back. Back half of the show includes... that's a tease. I'm just going to let you wait and see. That'll come up after this conversation with Professor Andrews here on the Carolina Insider.
Jones and I are fortunate enough to talk to a lot of people, but I have to say, I think we may be a little more nervous than we typically would be today, because some of our interactions with college professors have not always been positive. And so today we have Matt Andrews, who, if you know, if you're a podcast listener, because this is the professor that Andrew Playtech brought up a couple weeks ago, who he said was one of the highlights of his Carolina undergraduate career. So we thought, hey, we probably need to talk to Matt Andrews. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Just so you know, I'm a pretty nice guy, but there will be a grade at the end of the session.
Will you be evaluating participation?
Yes, absolutely. Intellectual content. Yep. So it's all on the
line. Oh boy.
I remember when I was in school, I actually, my final grade got docked down because I misspelled the professor's name on the final paper. And so it went from like a B plus to a B or something like that.
Well, I curse with having kind of two first names, Matthew Andrews.
Oh.
Andrews. So I get Andrew Matthews all the time. I try not to let it bother me.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir on that one now, Matt. I've been called Angel Jones more times than I can count. All right. So tell us a little bit about your background, how you made your way to UNC and just how you found your way to Chapel Hill.
Yeah, no, sure. Again, thanks for having me on here. I was so pleased to hear Andrew say that he enjoyed my course, Baseball and American History. So I've been here since 2012. I'm from the West Coast. I'm from California. And I did my undergraduate career at UCLA, another school with a pretty rich basketball tradition. And then I came out here to get my PhD at UNC, boy, way back in 1999. And I've been here teaching at UNC since 2012. I'm an American historian, so my PhD is in regular old American history. But over the years, my own intellectual interests and my teaching interest, I've learned that a great way to teach American history is by teaching course about sports and American history. So I teach a course called exactly that, Sports and American History. I teach a course called Baseball and American History. I teach a course on the Olympic Games. That's kind of a global history of the Olympic Games. And this semester, I'm teaching a course that I've only taught two other times. It's relatively new. It's called Race, Basketball, and the American Dream.
How do you know when something is just something cool you like reading about and finding out more about, and when something is legitimately something you can design a course around?
Right. We don't necessarily just, you know, I like watching a lot of TV shows too, and I wouldn't be the guy to teach a course on the history of television, although people do. Two thoughts here, Adam. One is that, first of all, a lot of people share my enthusiasm for sports, right? I think you guys are probably among them. Right or wrong, we love sports in this country. So I instantly knew that talking about sports would be a way to get people into the classroom. But it's more than that. I mean, I think sports is such a great way to get at the American past. You know, we talk about this country being a place about fairness and where everyone is supposed to be treated equally and people rising and falling based on their own abilities. And that's exactly what sports are supposed to be. So in my courses, we talk about, look, if you want to judge the way that women have been treated in American history or Black Americans have been treated in American history, let's just look at the way that they've been treated in the world of sports. I think it gives us a pretty good barometer about the way they have been treated in American society much more generally.
Matt, what was the course that you just said that you had just started? It was basketball and race. I think, what was that class again?
Yeah, it's called History 585. It's called Race, Basketball, and the American Dream. You know, I just taught the first lecture the other day, and I actually started by talking about myself being a white guy who grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, but in a pretty segregated town, and how the way that I kind of learned or thought I was learning about race and interacting with African Americans was through watching basketball and playing basketball and reading about basketball. And so part of what we do in that course is we try to figure out what types of racial lessons do Americans learn watching basketball, reading about the game. What role have basketball players like Oscar Robertson and Bill Russell and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Charles Scott, have they played, you know, and the influence that they've had beyond the basketball court in American history? So we explore those types of issues.
What do you think? Well, what do you think we have learned in that? Like, how do you think it has affected racial relations?
Well, that's a great question. I think there's probably two answers that I'd want to give here. One, look, sports, and I think it's too bad that sports had to do this, but sports have been a big part of the civil rights movement, right? It should have been the Black doctors and the philosophers and the educators that changed so many Americans' minds about race in this country. And instead, to a large degree, it was the baseball players and the basketball players and the fighters. I'm thinking of Joe Louis and Jackie Robertson and Oscar Robertson and Bill Russell and so on. So without a doubt, basketball. Look, let's think about UNC for a second here. When you think about desegregation at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, who do you think about?
Sure.
For a lot of people, yeah, I think it's Charles Scott.
Yeah.
And so Charles Scott playing the game in the way that he did and being accepted by his teammates and in the way that he was, you know, kind of showed a different way for this university. And then every university has a story like that. But we also talk about, I think, the lies that were told growing up about, for example, Black athletes. You know, I was told growing up, not by my parents or anything, but by reading Sports Illustrated and listening to CBS Sports in the 1970s and the 80s. And I was told that white athletes were smart and Black athletes had natural ability. I was told that, you know, white athletes played a disciplined game of basketball and Black athletes played a playground style of basketball. And I took, as a young person, I took that to mean that they played an undisciplined style of basketball. Those are lies. That's not true. But those are ideas that were told by the basketball press. And so we explore those ideas. We explore that the way that myths about race are propagated through sports like basketball.
I don't think any of us in this conversation were old enough to have experienced the 1968 Olympics and Tommy Smith and John Carlos firsthand. But we all know kind of what that meant, what we think it meant for sports moving forward. Is what we saw this summer, especially in the NBA, is that, do you think that's going to be a similar type of moment down the road that people look back on?
Yeah, Adam, and maybe this gets to the question you first asked me, right? How do you know when something really matters? I guess I was 2 months old when Tommy Smith and John Carlos raised their fist in 1968, so I did not really experience it. But yeah, I think what Smith and Carlos did, you know, very much sort of following in the footsteps of Muhammad Ali, who's really kind of thought of as the first athlete who uses his position to question American race relations as forcefully as he did. You know, Ali and then Smith and Carlos, they sort of changed our idea, I think, about what athletes could do, how they could use their platform to make statements about racial justice. And then, you know, other athletes did this. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did this and Jim Brown did this and there were others. And then it seemed like it went away for a while, right? It seemed as if all athletes weren't using their platform anymore to make these types of statements until Colin Kaepernick in 2016. He really kind of reignites the argument. I suppose LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and others, Dwayne Wade had made statements like that. And then what we saw in the NBA this summer with all the unrest going on, you know, and all of us stuck in our homes and just reading about it and then watching films of what was going on throughout the country. That is without a doubt one of the moments that we will be talking about when these guys went on strike, basically, you know, when they put their livelihoods on the line for the positions that they believed in. You know, in my race and basketball class, my final two lectures used to be called Basketball in the Age of Obama and Basketball in the Age of LeBron. But I added a third one. It's called Basketball in the Bubble. And we're going to talk all about what happened in the summer of 2020 with the NBA players and the WNBA players.
Matt, did you study Dean Smith? Were you aware of Coach Smith and the role that he had here in Chapel Hill? I'd just be interested in your thoughts on what role that he played, if you have one.
Yeah, sure. Well, I did not grow up, you know, worshiping at the altar of Dean Smith, like I think people in North Carolina. Like I said, I'm from California, went to UCLA. For us, it was John Wooden. Although, you know, even though I do still kind of have a fierce loyalty to UCLA, I have learned that though people love Coach Wooden, you know, and just praise him endlessly, John Wooden did not have the same feisty political spirit that Dean Smith had. And that's the thing that I've been most impressed with coming here to UNC and learning about Dean Smith. And I suppose I had known the story about Charles Scott and desegregation and the role that he played in it. And, you know, I think Charles Scott is the central figure in that story, but someone has to open the door, right? And Dean Smith was the one who did the right thing and opened that door for Charles Scott. But also, just the more I learn about him, about the way that he was involved in issues, he and his wife talking about environmental concerns and voicing concerns about sex trafficking in the 1980s. And he just was not one of these people who was gonna keep it close to the vest, who was gonna stay mum and say they're good people on both sides. He impresses me as someone who had beliefs. We don't see that often with college basketball coaches anymore. Maybe it's because they make so much money, maybe it's because they're afraid of upsetting alums. I'm not exactly sure, but geez, the more I learn about Dean Smith, the more I am impressed about what a principled person he seems to have been.
I think it would be interesting to find out where Coach Smith stood on name, image, and likeness. And I think I know where you stand, and we've had Bubba Cunningham on here, and we've heard his take, which I think is a little more nuanced than sometimes people pick up on. But where do you think we're headed with that now, and where should we be headed, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, so this is just my opinion, obviously. It seems to me that we can't really talk about fairness in college sports until the athletes, particularly the revenue athletes, obviously, right? Like the basketball and the football players are getting compensated. I'm a big proponent of name, image, and likeness. I've been saying for the last 15 years that it's coming. And then when California signed that bill, I guess that's about 2 years ago now, it obviously started the ball rolling. I know that athletic directors have largely been opposed to it. I understand that. I've read some of the things that Bubba Cunningham has said about it and talked about this. I forget the exact term that he used, but kind of a pool where all the revenue ought to go. I don't agree with that. I really do see it like Taylor Branch saw it. Taylor Branch, who went to UNC and is a civil rights historian, and kind of started the argument in 2015 with that article in the Atlantic Monthly. He sees it as a civil rights issue, and he says that people should be able to receive and value for their look. I'm not talking about the university paying football players and basketball players. I think that's a completely different issue. I don't think that's a bridge that we're ready to cross yet. This is just about people being able to monetize their name, image, and likeness on their own time, like every single UNC student is allowed to do. I don't see why the athletes should be treated any differently. It's coming. It's definitely coming. The NCAA has kind of put it on the back burner because of COVID. But once that law changes in California and then in Florida and in other states, I just don't see how schools are going to be able to resist it anymore.
One thing that Andrew Platek said when he was with us was he really enjoyed your class because you had a way of lecturing that wasn't like you were lecturing the people in the room. A lot of people don't like talking to rooms full of people. What's the key to doing that well?
That's a good question. So a long time ago, look, I wasn't always, I'm not saying I'm great at it, but I wasn't always as good at it as I am now. A long time ago, someone gave me some good teaching advice, and they said, teach like your hair is on fire. Walk into that room, and there is no such thing as being too energetic, as being too manic, as being too crazy, as being too enthusiastic. I have tried to put that to the test a couple of times. Sometimes I get really amped up on coffee when I walk into the room and I start letting it fly. And it seems to me that the louder and the more wild I am, the more the students seem to like it. So that's rule number one. And then the other thing, historians we're lucky in the sense that we teach a subject matter that is just tailor-made for storytelling, and people love stories. And I think I remember Andrew saying that he felt like I was telling a story, rather than talking about difficult theories or theorems or philosophies. And so what I really like to do in my sports history class is that we don't just talk about the great athletes. I do like to tell biographical stories. I'll talk about Oscar Robertson And I'll just tell people his life story, and I'll use him to talk about segregation in Indianapolis in the 1950s, you know, when he played for Crispus Attucks High School. And I'll use him to talk about coming to North Carolina in the Dixie Classic and playing in basketball in a segregated state, and then wondering aloud what kind of effect that must have had on the way people thought about race in North Carolina. And then we'll use him to talk about the push for free agency in basketball and how he framed that as a racial issue. You know, so the theory, Adam, I think, is to tell these stories, and people are just naturally drawn to stories. But before they know what's even hit them, we're actually talking about, you know, critical race theory, or we're talking about gender, or we are talking about these complicated ideas that they might not otherwise be receptive to. But if we talk about those complicated ideas while talking about Billie Jean King and Muhammad Ali and Jackie Robinson and Michael Jordan and so on, people seem interested in those themes.
Matt, of course, for, gosh, it felt like a really long time, there were some tensions between the athletic side and the academic side at Carolina because of the NCAA investigation at Carolina and the relationship with the AFAM department, all those different things. From someone who was on the academic side, who clearly has an interest in athletics, I'd just be interested in your opinion on kind of how all of that played out. And it all seemed to get so convoluted and twisted and confusing by the end. Just your thoughts on that situation.
Yeah, Jones, it really did get convoluted and twisted, and I wasn't in the inner circle of the professors who were investigating this, or part of the administration or the athletics department. Just, you know, like so many other people, I was reading about this in the Daily Tar Heel and in the NNO. I definitely want no part of any sort of divide between the academic side and the athletic side, between professors and athletes. And I can tell you with a lot of confidence that, you know, among me and my colleagues, that divide really does not exist. We love the student athletes who take our courses. I have a lot of basketball players and football players and field hockey players and rowers that are in my course. I love having them in my course. They are some of the hardest working students I've ever encountered. So what I was really disappointed in, and not just here at UNC, but around the nation, was this just sort of idea that rose up that, you know, student athletes, the people who come to UNC and are taking courses and play sports, that they're not trying, that they're not doing the work, that they're not smart. And that is absolutely not true. I think if there was any sense of frustration coming from professors, it actually wasn't with the athletics department. It was with the administration that, come on, we all know this, just didn't really get to the bottom of this quickly enough. And, you know, I think a lot of us just sort of felt, look, we realize how much money the athletics department brings in, the program brings in, funds all of the other sports, football and basketball, football in particular. I think we were frustrated with just the lack of sort of transparency and about what was going on. But really, I think you put it really well. It was a confusing, sort of muddled, mixed up time. And again, I'm happy to report and want to report that my colleagues and I, we don't see this divide that's out there. I think that's something that has been, you know, kind of created by people who are just listening to a couple of voices.
Do you ever
hear- Sorry, guys, I kind of butchered that part. I don't know if that made any sense.
Well, I thought that was good.
No, yeah.
Do you ever hear some of those voices speak who are kind of, I don't want to say in your circle, but they're on the academic side, and think that person really has no firsthand experience with what they're talking about. I wish I could help them understand better.
Not anymore, actually. When I first started, Adam, teaching these courses on sports, actually, I did them first. I was at Guilford College in Greensboro for a few years teaching. And without a doubt, there were a lot of people who were even suspicious of these courses, you know, this is just going to be a course where you're testing people on who won which World Series, or, you know, which NCAA team won the NCAA championship in basketball and in what particular year. And they were suspicious of the sort of sports industrial complex, as some people have talked about. And it, frankly, there's a lot to be suspicious and wary of, I think, of big time college sports. We can't close our eyes to what's going on in big time college sports. But most people now know, what people in the classroom want is we want people from different backgrounds, people with different perspectives. And I mean that in a racial way, in a class way, in a gender way. I mean that we want musicians, we want athletes, we want people who do drama. We want people who are just here, you know, to take courses. We want people from all different types of perspectives in our classrooms. I love it when I'm talking about basketball and Brandon Robinson or KJ Smith, a couple guys who were in them at my class. I think the first time I taught it, they would weigh in and they would give their perspective on these types of issues. So no, I think I'm kind of, once again, happy to say that those kind of lingering suspicions, I certainly don't hear from anyone speaking in that kind of way.
You mentioned your affinity for UCLA, natural affinity, of course. Who are you a fan of? Are you? I assume that you are a fan of some kind of teams out there. Who do you cheer for?
When I first came here at UNC in 1999, I was holding real firm to my UCLA basketball fandom, but and all sports, and they're now my second favorite team. UNC is my favorite team, and it's not because UNC signs my checks. It's because I know these young people now. I mean, they're in my classroom, and I like them. They're great young people. I'm talking about the male and the female athletes, all the sports. I just cannot not root for them because I've gotten to know them so well. I am a huge grew up a UCLA fan. I am a huge Kareem Abdul-Jabbar fan. He continues, you know, to be an outspoken and political figure. I just think he's sort of the model of what athletes can accomplish. He's actually also my answer to who is the greatest basketball player of all time, which gets me in a little trouble in Michael Jordan land. But I will stick to that. And being from the Bay Area, I grew up a huge Golden State Warriors fan. I started watching them in the late 1970s. It was pretty rough going for about 40 years, but the last few years have actually all pay off.
Well, that's why we don't do these interviews live, because we can go back and take out that part about Kareem. And yeah, nobody even needs to know that.
I'll just be edited out. No big deal.
We've had
he is inarguably the greatest high school player of all time. He is inarguably the greatest college player of all time. I don't think either of you would disagree with that. Now, I think we could argue about whether he's the greatest professional basketball player of all time, though. He has the most MVPs, more MVPs than anyone else. He is the all-time leading scorer in NBA history. My students ask me all the time, who's better, Jordan or LeBron? Jordan, I mean, that's the argument in their head. And then I tell them neither. And then they look at me like I'm insane. And then I tell them who I think is the greatest basketball player of all time. And then we take it from there.
It's like a little extra credit question at the bottom of the quiz. It's like, look, if you feel like you just need a couple extra points on this quiz, who's the greatest? I'm just going to make you write this down.
Who's the greatest? Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I mean, if we're on the blacktop and we're picking teams, I think I might go with number 23 from UNC.
I know one thing inarguably, and that is Jones and I are not going to argue with someone about that who's got doctor in front of their name.
Well, it doesn't make me any smarter about basketball, trust me.
We've had lots of students on here and been able to talk to them about what this last 10 or so months has been like for them. What about for you? What's it been like for someone who regularly goes into rooms with bunches of people and kind of thrives off that interaction and hasn't been able to do that?
Wow, you guys ask great questions.
Call me doctor.
You know, yeah, sure. It's been, I hesitate to put it this way, but first of all, it's been good for business, right? I'm just talking so much about this stuff, private organizations, public organizations. Suddenly everyone kind of wants to talk about the links between sports and politics. So links that have always been there, but have just been illuminated in them in the last month. For me, actually, I was so inspired back in, I'm trying to remember now, was that late August or early September when the UNC athletes, when they did their march down Franklin Street and they went to the planetarium and they had their Black Lives Matter signs and their slogans and they had their group photograph taken. And I had a different lecture plan for that Tuesday in my sports and American history class. I don't even remember what it was. And I just wanted to impress upon them, because some of the people who were in that photograph were in my class, just how kind of radical of a moment that was. Like, stuff like that just has not happened in my lifetime and before my lifetime. There have been these little episodes here and there, but the way in which athletes at Tennessee and LSU and UNC all marching in the name of these causes that they believe in, the causes of racial justice. I was so inspired by them. And then the other thing that I would say that really was meaningful to me, and for those of you who are undergraduate students who happen to listen to this, never hesitate reaching out to your professors after you've graduated. You may think you're bothering us, but you are not. I love hearing from former students. Adam and Jones, I can't tell you how gratified I was. I received so many emails from former students thanking me for 10 years ago or 7 years ago, 5 years ago, introducing them to these ideas, these themes, talking to them about how political sports are, talking to them about why Colin Kaepernick was doing what he was doing. But I allow for a lot of disagreement in my courses. And just kind of after the fact, thanking me, I kind of feel like I'm patting myself on the back here, but I think what I'm doing is really just sort of saying, this is what college is supposed to be, and this is what education is supposed to be like. I am so blessed to be able to go in front of a room, in front of young people, and talk to them about these issues, and to think that I play any role whatsoever in them thinking differently about the world around them. That is so gratifying for me.
We appreciate Matt Andrews' time, and Adam, good stuff. I would have taken those classes.
I would totally go sit in that class this year.
Maybe you could be a guest speaker.
No.
Dr. Andrews, get Adam on there.
You know what I think he should do? And I almost asked him this, but I felt like maybe I shouldn't be telling him his business. I feel like Michael Jordan could be a class. Kind of the last big mega, mega, mega star before social media. So how is that different than today? Look, I've got the whole syllabus written out. Matt Andrews, just call me. I'll send you the course plan.
Okay, Adam, couple things. Well, I tell you what, why don't we take a look at some of these, some more inspirational quotes.
To get pumped up.
Yeah. I like this one from Edward Yeager. I'm guessing it's Yeager. It is, he said, wrinkles only go where the smiles have been. Mm. Not the case. I don't know if that's 100% accurate. But inspirational.
I've been smiling in some weird places.
Lori Blair Mercer, attributing to John Wayne, life is hard. It's harder when you're stupid.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. Not to disagree with John Wayne, I don't think that's true.
I think it's easier.
I think it's much easier when you're stupid because you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know what you don't know.
Right. And you don't know that everyone else thinks you're clueless and basically doesn't depend on you to do anything. I think it's much tougher when you're somewhat competent. One day I hope to be somewhat competent and find out if I'm right.
Yeah. Guys, don't tell Adam that he really is. He's talking about himself.
Somewhere John Wayne's like, Lucas boy has never figured out I was talking about him.
Stephen Goodwin just gave us the Carolina's going to win the national championship. Mm. Those are inspirational words. Rusty Cotterman, be less like you and more like someone better than you. Also something Adam follows every time he walks into the Pod World headquarters.
I try to be more like Rusty.
JC Fox says it's called chemistry and I have it with everybody. Justin Miller, If you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
That's kind of how the pod works sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. We had a couple emails. Hold on, that we had to Heather Justice. She said that she first heard this one from Freddie Kiger. If ifs and buts were candy and nuts, every day would be Christmas.
I have said that before, but now that I see it in writing and really think about it, I don't fully understand it. I guess that goes back to the days when you got candy and nuts for Christmas.
Yeah. That means everybody has a lot of ifs and buts. If ifs and buts were candy and nuts, every day would be Christmas. Yeah.
I can see Freddie saying that at the front of a classroom and like tapping his temple, and the class just writes it down because they know it might be on the quiz.
Jeremy Wolberg. Never criticize a man until you've walked a mile in his shoes. That way, when you criticize him, you're a mile away and you have his shoes. See, I like that one.
I like that one.
That's good. Adam actually sent me the audio of a Randy. I bet Adam got so excited and he was watching. He's like, I'm going to record what Randy has to say.
Yep. Well, so Name That Tune is an hour long program, but it's 2 30-minute shows,
yeah,
in the hour.
Competitions.
Kind of like the sweep.
Yeah.
And in show one of this hour, Randy didn't get to give a speech.
What the world?
I don't know, but not surprisingly, yeah, it was a little bit lackluster of a competition.
Yeah, there was no tune naming in the championship round.
Yeah. So in game two, they remembered they had left Randy out and he was contractually obligated to provide some wisdom. And he notably decided to go with the great philosopher Kelly Clarkson.
So I'm going to do my best to, I'm going to try to include this audio that Adam sent me. Please. I'm going to leave it all in, which probably also includes like Adam scurrying with his phone to the TV screen to try to get it. By the way, totally underrated, Adam, which we didn't mention when we were talking about this the other day, that they've now called this segment Get Deep with Randy Jackson.
And I'm not sure that's even really the official name. I think that they've all just decided like that is what it embodies, and so that's what they're going to call it. But I think it's good that you play it just as it was sent. It'll be just like the Anthony Harris interview.
Yeah.
Like, we're giving people full-on behind-the-scenes look at everything that goes on.
Just be aware you know about Adam's potty mouth, so I can't vouch for what happens on this recording.
Also, when you hear that strange, bass sound, that's one tiny tear falling down onto the microphone after Randy inspires me.
Now, it's time to get deep with Randy Jackson. Randy, any words of wisdom?
You know what comes to mind right now, Jane? Kelly Clarkson. Kelly once said, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You fought hard to get here. You're here now. Don't give up. Keep fighting. We believe in you.
Hey.
Come on, man. Stay in the mindset. Stay in the game,
appreciate it. That's right. I will try my hardest.
Adam, you've inspired me to go to your list.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Well, Jones, you mentioned this earlier. There's been some chatter about the ACC tournament. And our boy, Mike Bray,
yeah,
whose side note I think I would like a lot, just as a bro,
yeah,
has got some thoughts on this.
Okay. Hit me with them, Mike Bray, via Adam.
We've all talked about it on our campuses with our ADs. There's been nothing coming from the ACC office on a change of plans for the ACC tournament. One of the theories that my AD has, and he is on the subcommittee and talks weekly with the league, is why would your team go all the way to Greensboro when the risk is you could only play one game? Is there a different format in Greensboro where you're guaranteed more than one game? The Notre Dame AD has thrown a lot of different ideas at the league, and I think that's valid. How that shapes up, I don't know. There are a lot of things being thrown out there, but by February 1, which, side note, that's next week, we probably are going to have to make some decisions on if it will be the normal format or if it will be different. One of the concerns Mike Bray heard brought up Will teams opt out of the ACC tournament given their situation? That's probably a reality. They could say, we're done.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have, from the opting out perspective, there's two ways that could go. I think if you have a team like Gonzaga, for example, who is going to make the NCAA tournament, what benefit is there of going to their conference tournament? And I know people get all mad about this. It's kind of like the bowls. I mean, what is that going to accomplish for Gonzaga? And again, I'm just assuming Gonzaga is going to be either undefeated or maybe, you know, lost once or something. I mean, they're that good, and they're in nothing but West Coast Conference games at this point. So there's that option of them going, you know what, we're going to be the number one seed. We're just not playing. You give us a loss on our schedule, whatever. Then I think you have the other side. If you've got a team that's just had a miserable year and they're just ready to be done, and I know you've got that potential long shot carrot of, you know, winning five games in 5 days and getting in the NCAAs, but would it surprise you if somebody just said, you know what, we're 7-19 and we just don't want to do this anymore and don't think, you know, in the interest of safety, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and in a tournament format, if you're going with the current format, what do? You just give the team that they were supposed to play, they just luck out and get a bye?
Well, and I think another question is, Adam, I guess it worked for the Maui thing in Asheville, but what happens if a team gets a positive test while they're in the tournament?
Right.
And then what does that mean for the NCAA tournament the next week? It's a lot of risk.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Making it to the ACC tournament semifinals worth you potentially not being able to participate the next week in Indianapolis in the NCAA tournament? I don't think there's many teams that would trade that. So, given what we've seen from the ACC so far, I expect we're going to keep on trucking as if we are going to have a normal ACC tournament. I do not think that is the best idea.
I know there have been some calls here in the last week or two, kind of behind the scenes as far as media side of things, like trying to figure out how would all this work, the seating, the technology. Who would even be there from the radio side? And is TV going to be there in person?
We've decided to let Jones and Big Grits call all the games.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't, and we have not discussed this as a network. I can't imagine we're going to do anything other than just call the Tar Heel games and then turn right back around and come back to Chapel Hill. And if the Tar Heels win, then we'll drive back to Greensboro the next day and do it again. I guess. We hadn't talked about it yet. But, I mean, there's some schools aren't going to go, from a media perspective.
Right.
Again, seems like a lot of risk for the reward.
And I understand we all value the ACC tournament in our own ways.
Yeah.
But this is just a different year. It's been a different year since day one, even though some people have tried to act like it's not. It just is. And next year, we'll go back and we'll have a regular ACC tournament, although hopefully we'll learn something from this year and try to make the appropriate changes. But let's try to use some common sense with this ACC tournament. Staying on that hot ACC news beat, we talked the other day about the ACC's TV deal, and I thought this little comment from David Hale did a good job putting it in perspective. The Pac-12 distributed $32 million per school without making the playoff in the last fiscal year. So $32 million a school. The ACC distributed $27 million a school with a team in the playoff last fiscal year. So that gives you a little bit of an idea when people say the ACC's, and I think the phrase was cement financial shoes, you're $5 million behind the Pac-12, and remember, the Pac-12 just basically got rid of their commissioner because they felt like they were too far behind the SEC, Big Ten financially. So that's $5 million per school behind the league that thinks they're behind. That's not a very positive sign. But just get Navy and everything will be fine. We've already figured this out. This was an awesome interview with John Madden.
Whoa, I didn't see this.
It was on ESPN.com. It was by Michael Rothstein. It was apparently John Madden doesn't do interviews.
No, he barely does any, if any.
Why is that?
I don't know.
You didn't ask him?
No.
So he agreed to do an email interview with this guy. And long interview, definitely worth finding. I really like this part. So this is John Madden describing how he watches football each week. I watch a lot of football each week. I watch every game on my sound stage. I have 10 screens, one movie theater type of screen in the middle. Then I have 9 screens around it, 4 screens on either side, and 1 screen down below, and they're all numbered. So we can switch from one game to another game so we don't watch any commercials. I've been doing this since I retired. It's kind of a complicated thing, but it's a system that works for us. That's why I set it up, and I do that every Sunday. I think that we need to go watch football with John Madden one Sunday.
Well, I do think John Madden has stayed in the social conscious because of the video game.
And they talk a lot about that in this interview.
But if you're too young to remember John Madden, I mean, like you knew it was a big game when John Madden was the analyst on the game. And he was so awesome. And he just seems like, and I feel like I've heard this, this may be totally incorrect. I feel like a lot of times if there's big kind of game of football questions, a lot of times John Madden is involved in the discussions of, you know, how to make things safer or, you know, whatever it might be. He's just a football guy who's always loved it, had the personality to be great, was obviously a great coach, I mean, a Hall of Famer. So, I mean, just seems like an awesome dude.
I think it said in the story he's 84 years old.
Wow.
But as you said, huge impact on football all the way around. Rusty Sebastian did a great job. We talked on the Rapid Reactions pod about how we were both wearing sweater vests, but CB McGrath was not.
This is a pretty good little Photoshop Rusty sent.
He did a Photoshop of CB wearing a sweater vest. I did send that to CB, and he thoroughly appreciated it.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good Photoshop. Better than the Bernie Sanders Photoshops.
Well, now Rusty also did one of those. This is Rusty Sebastian, not director of Pond Security, Rusty. And then Downton Shabby did one also. One was at the Old Well,
yep.
And then one was here in Pond World headquarters.
Yeah.
What do you, strong feelings about the Bernie Sanders meme?
The only feelings I have are the one person, David Staley, who said, which one is Adam and which one is Bernie? Those two do feel like kindred spirits to me.
Yeah. Well, certainly in that pose.
Grumpy old men.
Yeah. I wrote this down a while ago, and I forgot to ever talk about it. We've talked some about kind of the steps Carolina has taken for COVID safety, and sometimes they're very frustrating. But I just thought this was telling. So when Carolina played at PNC Arena about a month ago now,
yeah,
so it's been a while, I had to get in the elevator to go up to wherever I was going. And there were already a couple people in the elevator. And so, ding, door opens. I kind of stand there. I'm like, I don't know what to do. Should I get in? Should I not get in? I'm not sure. And they're like, you can if you want. And I was like, well, I don't really want, but I would like to go upstairs.
It's almost an I don't even want this. I do want to get upstairs, but I don't want to get in the elevator.
Right. But like here at Carolina, when you get in the elevator, there's a sign that says maximum capacity 2. Like, it's a small thing, but I think Carolina did a really good job with stuff like that. Little tiny things that you don't think about until you encounter them. And then you realize, oh, well, I need someone else to tell me because otherwise I'll probably do something dumb and get in the elevator with these guys so that I can go up to the next floor.
Did there seem like there were a lot of people at that Kansas City Buffalo AFC championship game?
Yes. I thought there were a lot of people at the Louisville Duke game.
I did not see any of the Louisville Duke game. I just heard the end of the game. I was still here grinding after after the State game, Adam. No big deal.
Well, and I know part of the reason, at least in the Louisville Duke game, was it appeared that there was no one in the upper deck and everyone was in the lower deck. I'm no diseaseologist.
Why? Okay. So they did that in Keenan, too.
Yeah.
My guess is, and this is a guess, I think it's so that you don't necessarily have to clean the upper level. So, like, you don't have to go sanitize it because people haven't been there. And so if you feel like you can distance them out just using the bottom section, that's what you do. That's my guess. I don't know that.
Well, that may be, but, well, first of all, the Yum Center is about 40% as big as Keenan
Stadium. Right, yeah. And it's inside.
And if you're going to limit capacity to a certain amount, but the capacity you're using is really only half of what the listed capacity is, then the percentage you're letting in is not correct. Like, you're basing the percentage you let in on total capacity.
Adam, if you could visualize my brain right now, it would be that meme from The Hangover where Zach Galifianakis is trying to do all the math to win all the money back, and he's got all the numbers and symbols flying around his head. That's going on in my head right now.
Well, but do you know what I'm saying?
But numbers, percentages, too many people.
Well, they let in a percentage of total capacity.
Right.
But then they shut off half the capacity.
Okay. Now I'm with you.
You should be letting in a if you're going to go based on percentage, it should be percentage of the actual seats that you're using.
Now I'm with you.
That's what I think. Again, I'm not a diseaseologist. That may not be the official name. There was an article in the Tucson newspaper, speaking of percentages and high-level math.
Just Adam perusing the Tucson newspaper. Yeah, no big deal here.
I just
here.
Sit down each Sunday morning with newsies from around the nation.
Please bring me my 112 newspapers for the day.
Honey, run down to the newsstand and pick me up all my Sunday dailies.
Give the youngster there selling them half a pence.
I'm going to give the funnies to the kids because they always enjoy those.
Why, sir, it's Christmas Day. You go down the street and get the largest turkey they have.
Okay. Bruce Pasco is the writer, and the headline is, "Empty arenas aren't impacting hoops outcomes, experts say, even though it feels that way."
Okay.
We've talked about that some, about does it make any difference playing on the road when there's no one there? Ken Pomeroy, stats guru,
he's going to put the abacus to this,
says home teams have won conference games 56.6% of the time so far this season. Normally, home teams win about 60% over the previous four seasons. So, translates into about a point less of an advantage than what he would normally assign to a home team.
That feels about right. I mean, I think it is not as difficult to go on the road as a normal year, but it's still not easy. You still have to go through the travel, and you know, you're staying in a hotel, and I mean, there's still, you're in an unfamiliar place. I mean, there's just still some, and Adam, I mean, Tar Heels have played four ACC games on the road. Is my math right here? Yes, I think that's right. State, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Miami. Am I forgetting anybody?
Right. Yeah.
And, I mean, Georgia Tech and Florida State had a fair amount of people at those two games. And I thought it made a difference. Coach Williams has said he thought it made a difference in the Georgia Tech game. I think Carolina's got a bunch of games coming up where there aren't going to be any fans in the stands on the road. Pitt is that way. Duke is that way. BC is that way. Syracuse is that way. Clemson is allowing fans. So I'll be interested to see how that shakes out.
I think it would be interesting if we could compare. Like, I heard Coach Williams say the same thing, that Georgia Tech made a difference. Does that make a difference compared to what you've gotten used to this year, where you hear nothing? Or does it make a difference compared to a typical Georgia Tech game? I think it's that we've gotten so conditioned to, you can basically hear whatever you want, that it just seems different.
I don't know where I saw it, something that NBC, like on a Sunday Night Football, they were having to bleep out between 100 and 200 things per broadcast because you could hear so much more on field level.
I saw that. You definitely can.
Yeah.
You can hear things from concourse level that you normally cannot. Email, continuing this pod's theme of sports and society, or the pod in society. Email from Richard Lee. The subject is Turkey and the Straw and the RZA. So you know it's going to be good. Richard says, I thought you might find this interesting due to the involvement of our mutual friend, the RZA. I recently learned through the latest episode of Proof, a food deep dive podcast, that the traditional ice cream truck song, Turkey in the Straw, did you know that?
Well, I think I'm guessing everyone, when you just say ice cream truck song, everyone has an idea in their head what that is.
Right.
Although I can't necessarily vocalize it at the moment. I was unaware that it was called, that it had a name, and that name was Turkey in the Straw.
And, per Richard and Proof, a food deep dive podcast, that song has some egregiously racist versions of it from the Jim Crow era. As a result of this history...
So maybe don't put it in the podcast here underneath what we're talking about right now.
Well, I think we're just learning. As a result of this history, the parent company of several ice cream brands, along with the small company that manufactures nearly all ice cream truck music boxes, is that a lucrative business?
You've cornered the market.
They've partnered with the RZA to produce a new ice cream truck song that will, over time, per the hope of the ice cream titans, be replacing all the traditional jingles and ice cream trucks across the nation, royalty free.
Wow. I learned a lot right then. One, that there's some company that has the whole market on music box for ice cream truck lockdown. And that company thought, who should we partner with? Guys, we've got a problem. We got to give this song out. It doesn't represent what we here at Small Box Big Tunes believe in. Who should we partner with to get this figured out? The RZA. He's a lyrical genius. And there you go. So has the new song come out yet?
I think they're working on it.
They're currently working on what feels right for ice cream trucks.
I like that the RZA was able to do that royalty free, and you know why.
Yeah.
He's getting all those royalties off the pot.
Yeah. Yeah. He's making so much bank.
He's just sitting there in his big bathtub full of money, and he's like, just tell Ice Cream Titans I'll do that for nothing.
Yeah.
Jones and Adam are, as long as there's sports, or even not sports, Jones and Adam will be coming out every Tuesday and Friday, and then they'll send me that fat check.
Yeah.
Joby West tweeted us.
I like this.
He said that since we had coined the leaky train, he wanted to know if he could perhaps get started the love boat.
I like that.
I don't mind that.
We can get the big old foghorn sound.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, feels right.
All right, that's good. And then last thing, Al Hood sent a link to an article he wrote on Tar Heel Blog, basically building off of you, Jones, and how we've talked consistently about how, look, Carolina's in on this date of the season, but it's not the same as past dates of the season. And so he went back and looked at some other seasons to kind of say, kind of make a comparison. I thought he did a good job.
Thanks, Al.
But what he found out was, you were right.
Now I really like it.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks even more, Al.
Yeah, well, and some of the years he used were similar. Like, he talked about the 12-13 team, which I think is kind of similar to this year's team. He talked about Kendall Marshall's freshman year and pointed out that by this point in the season, game-wise, Kendall Marshall wasn't even the starting point guard. Like that, and I think of Kendall Marshall as starting half that year.
Right.
So always nice to actually put some numbers with the old eyeball test.
Before we finish things up, a reminder that we're brought to you by the Pinehurst Resort. That's Donald Ross's masterpiece, Pinehurst No. 2. Gil Hance's stunning redesign, Pinehurst No. 4. There's the Cradle, the stylish North and South Bar, Pinehurst Brewing Company. Yeah, just go make a weekend of it down in Pinehurst. Never been more to discover at the Cradle of American Golf. Go to Pinehurst.com, plan your visit. Mentioned this at the top of the show, Adam, but a lot of Tar Heel sports getting going, and a lot of them successful this past weekend. Women's basketball picked up a nice win over Notre Dame in Carmichael. The tennis programs were in the ITA, were hosting the first couple of rounds of the ITA. The women advanced through. As of this recording, the men had won the first round but had not played yet in the second round. They're favorites to advance through to go to the national level of the ITA championships, which I think is 16 teams in each location. Wrestling got a win at Duke. Gymnastics beat New Hampshire. I watched it on YouTube on Friday night because we're a big gymnastics house. So it was a good weekend for the Tar Heels.
So you could watch it live?
On YouTube. Huh. It was Tar Heels were at New Hampshire. I mean, it wasn't, Adam, I'm not going to say it was a ACC network level broadcast, but it was, there was a camera and you could see what was happening. You could not see the scores. They would zoom in after the rotations to like a big jumbotron, but it was a little too bright to actually read what it was. There was a woman speaking every now and then, but most importantly, you could see the action and see what was going on.
It's better than nothing.
Better than nothing. And so the gymnastics team and other teams, very successful weekend.
There was some swimming and diving action.
Swimming
in the pool.
And diving.
I went out. I think we had recorded some stuff on either Thursday or Friday. I think it was Friday. And so I went out into the old parking lot behind the Smith Center, and I heard some upbeat music playing. And I thought, Coach Williams is out here doing aerobics again. But no, it turned out to be the entire Virginia swimming team basically just spread across the parking lot doing their pre-meet warm-ups. Made it a little difficult to navigate out of the parking lot. I don't mind telling you.
You were weaving in and out of some breaststrokers.
Yeah, that's right.
Some backstrokers.
Just another day.
Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay. Tar Heels Pitt tonight in Pittsburgh. 7 o'clock. We're on the air at 6 o'clock. Radio-wise for that. Video pod coming up on Thursday. We'll do all the things we normally do.
ACC football schedule.
How did that happen?
Well, we know they weren't working on revising the basketball schedule. I'm marking that schedule in pen on my calendar, that football schedule, and I'm planning on sellout stadiums at every single one of those games, and ain't nothing going to stop me.
Adam did hate to see Robert Gillespie, Tar Heel running backs coach, leaving Chapel Hill to go to Alabama.
Thanks for bringing it down. Yeah. Well,
I mean,
he had done a great job.
Did a great job here. I'm going to guess that it was a financial boost for him. I mean, hard to turn that down.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, I think the person who was in that position left to take a head coaching job. So I think you feel like that's a viable move for your career. But I also think you give Mac Brown the opportunity to go out and find someone who he feels like is a good fit. I think he'll probably do that.
So we have that streaming show on Thursday, and then, unless something changes, we'll have a pod on Friday, but no game this weekend. So, again, day to day. For now, we're going to let Matt Andrews and get that royalty checkbook out, Adam, the RZA. We're going to let those two get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Matt Andrews. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner. Thank you.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network, brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina.